Our third case this morning is 2019-1433, the State of Ohio XREL Cable News Network Incorporated et al. Versus Bellbrook Sugar Creek Local Schools. For the appellant, we have two. First, we will have Ms. Reinhart.
May it please the court. Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. My name is Erin Reinhart, and I represent the media appellants in this case. I'll be splitting my time with Mr. Benjamin Flowers, who is arguing on behalf of the Ohio Attorney General. I will argue for 10 minutes, Mr. Flowers will argue for 5, and I would like to reserve 2 of my 10 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, appellants ask this court to reverse the Second District Court of Appeals decision and find that neither the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act nor its state counterpart, the Ohio Student Privacy Act, prohibit disclosure of the education records of a deceased adult. Overwhelming authority from this court, the United States Department of Education, and other states presented with this issue consistently find that when an adult student dies, the confidentiality protections of these statutes are no longer applicable. There is no reason for Ohio to be an outlier.
Counsel?
Yes.
What do we do with revised code 3319.321B, the last section, or without the written consent of each student who's 18 years of age or older? Seems pretty clear.
The statute should be interpreted consistently with FERPA. The FERPA statute has been consistently interpreted to find, with the exact same language, that upon death, an adult student no longer has those rights and can no longer provide consent. Therefore, there's three options here. One, a student who dies is impossible to provide consent. Two, there's the interpretation where the court rewrites the statute and provides that someone else should be providing the consent, such as an administrator or executor, which is improper under this court's precedent. Or third, the court rules in favor of the appellants and finds that where the statute is silent, it defers to the agency's, the agency's guidance. It's similar to what the court did in Souffrance v. Doe, where the court was interpreting whether or not FERPA and the Ohio Student Privacy Act applied to former students. In that case, the court deferred to the Department of Education, as well as the sister state's analysis of the issue, and applied the same exact statute and subsection of the statute at issue here today, consistently with FERPA.
Wouldn't that undercut the sunset provision of 75 years?
No, Your Honor, it does not. The sunset provision is only applicable where an exception is applicable. So if these exceptions are not applicable, the sunset provision does not even kick in. Your Honors, for decades, this court has interpreted Ohio's Public Records Act liberally and in favor of broad access to records. Here, the parties have stipulated to all the relevant evidence. There is no dispute that appellants are a public officer and public office, and that the requested documents are records under the revised code. Therefore, unless the appellees, as custodians of the records, can establish that an exception is applicable, the records must be disclosed. To justify their withholding of the records, appellees rely solely on the confidentiality provisions afforded under FERPA and the OSPA. Therefore, the sole issue before this court is whether either statute prohibits the release of a deceased adult's education records. As shown in the briefing, the answer is no. The fundamental rules of statutory construction apply here. The parties agree that both statutes are silent on the specific issue before the court. Therefore, the court must consider the intent of the legislature. The intent of the legislature is made clear when three things are considered. First, the common law against which both statutes were enacted, which refuses to extend privacy rights to the deceased. Second, consistent guidance from the Department of Education regarding FERPA's inapplicability to deceased adult students, as well as precedent from other states that have found that agency guidance to be applicable and have consistently applied it to both the federal statute as well as their state analogs. And third, this court's prior finding that enactment of the OSPA was to bring Ohio into compliance with FERPA. In School Choice Ohio, this court found that FERPA was enacted to protect the privacy rights of students. The OSPA was enacted to bring Ohio into compliance with FERPA. To Judge Fisher's question, there is no reason to interpret these statutes differently. They are exactly the same for purposes of this issue. The common law against which both of these statutes was enacted also finds that privacy rights lapse at death. In Cordell, Young, and Reeves, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals found that Ohio law is consistent with the, quote, general rule, end quote, that the right of privacy lapses at death. In other words, the default here is inapplicability postmortem. In 1996, this court agreed. In Finley Publishing versus Schroeder, the court ordered the disclosure of the records relating to suicide victims and refused to find that the deceased had privacy rights that would prevent disclosure of those records. Second, the Department of Education, as mentioned previously, has consistently interpreted FERPA's confidentiality protections to terminate at death. This court has followed the Department of Education's guidance when interpreting both FERPA and the OSPA. Again, as I mentioned in Sioux France, the court evaluated whether FERPA applied to former students. In rendering its decision, the court relied on the guidance of the Department of Education to interpret both FERPA and the parallel provision of the Ohio Student Privacy Act.
So I wonder if we could delve a little bit more into FERPA then. Is it, I mean, I'm a little troubled by the idea that we as the Ohio Supreme Court have to look at just how FERPA has been interpreted and what the FERPA federal guidance has been. I mean, what's the extent, do you think, of the ability for the state of Ohio to determine for itself when the confidentiality would end? Is there no ability for the state to do something different than what the federal government has done?
No, there is. There absolutely is that ability. However, the legislature, Ohio's legislature, the General Assembly, chose in this case to use the same language as was used in the federal statute.
But even if we give you that, that the language is the same, why does that necessarily mean that the interpretation has to be the same?
Because any other interpretation of the statute would be either absurd, requiring the consent of a deceased individual, which is impossible, or it would be rewriting the statute altogether by providing that someone else, aside from the decedent, should be permitted to provide that consent. There is no consistent legislative approach in Ohio or at the federal level when it comes to determining the confidentiality protections of a deceased individual. So for example,
I'm having a hard time understanding your argument that we would have to rewrite the statute to allow someone else to provide the consent. Why wouldn't we just apply the statute, do exactly what it says? No person shall release without the written consent. If there's not written consent, no person shall release. That seems completely straightforward.
Because there's absolutely no legal precedent to support
What about the statute? What about the plain language of the statute itself? I mean, if I gave this statute to my 15-year-old kid, he could understand exactly what it says. Why wouldn't we just apply that language?
Well, the statute is silent on the express issue before the court. And under this court,
it's not silent. It says no person shall release. That's the issue before the court, is whether or not someone shall release. It says no person shall release.
The statute actually says
it doesn't deal with a hypothetical situation that someone else may present, but you don't have to add or subtract words to the statute to apply it.
The statute actually uses the word student, and both of them, the federal and the state analog, use the word student and requires the student consent. It is silent, and the parties don't dispute that the statute's silent on whether or not that student, once deceased, has any rights or anyone else has any right to provide consent. The legislature does not have a consistent approach. And in fact, where it's silent, under Lange versus Department of Job and Family Services, the court should defer to agency guidance where applicable. So there is longstanding precedent from this court that shows that where a statute is silent, it should probe beyond the plain language of the statute.
Well, counselor, couldn't a student have provided consent before passing away? The student at issue in this case, arguably, he could have consented to his records being released sometime before his demise, correct?
The consent would have to be done at the time of the request. Otherwise, it doesn't allow the student to change their mind.
But the student could have given consent prior to, so are you saying the statute prohibits consent prior to request?
No, not at all, Your Honor. What I'm suggesting is that the student must provide consent at the time that their records are asked to be released.
But you're saying there's no prohibition to there being some form of consent on record prior to a request.
Correct, but the statute does not read that way. The statute provides that the student must provide consent. Where the student, in this case, is now deceased and it's impossible to provide consent, there is no other applicable.
Counsel, what about approaching it through the probate? If there were a executor or an administrator appointed, would they be able to consent?
No, Your Honor, they would not. If the court were to find that the executor or administrator or some other person were able to provide that consent, the court would essentially be rewriting the statute.
Well, that means if that's your interpretation, that the duly authorized administrator or executor, which has broad duties and responsibilities and rights once they're appointed by the court, even that type of entity could not disclose, then it seems to me that the legislature was pretty, they truly meant what is written here. Nobody can do this.
No, Your Honor, the other statutes that have been cited by the appellee show that there's no consistent approach. Some of them are silent, similar to here. And the other statutes either provide for a specific period of time or provide for a specific individual that may provide that consent. Some of them provide for the rights of an administrator.
So then the statute, the writers of the statute knew what they were doing in these instances and made specific, included specific language to establish what their intent was.
In certain statutes, they did. In other statutes, they left it silent, like here. And in that case,
intentional. What would presume to be intentional?
Well, under the Lange decision, if the statute's silent on the express issue, then the agency deference should be afforded. Your Honors, I see that my time is running out. I'd like to defer the balance of my time to Mr. Flowers.
Mr. Flowers?
Yes, Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'm here on behalf of Attorney General Dave Yost. I'll quickly run through our argument here. I want to explain why we're here and then why the statutory text and purpose support the position we're taking. So the initial matter, why are we here? You know, we're fortunate to live in a country where the government works for the governed and not the other way around. And because of that, to maintain that balance, this state has long appreciated the importance of maintaining public access to government records. The records in this case serve an incredibly important purpose because they may hold clues the public can use to educate itself and its legislators about the red flags raised by mass shooters and potentially to hold accountable local officials who failed to heed those warning signs. So that's why we're here. Of course, we also want to get law right. So why do we think the law supports the position we're taking, which is that disclosure is required? If we look at the text of both FERPA and the Ohio Student Privacy Act, both create a privacy right. They don't create a complete bar on disclosure, but they rather allow disclosure with consent. The reason that matters is because, given that it creates a privacy right, we look to the manner in which privacy rights were understood at the time. And at the time, and even today, privacy rights were understood to lapse with death. So to Justice Fisher, Justice DeWine, Justice French, I think Justice Stewart and Chief Justice O'Connor too, I think everybody, the question was, how does that matter here? What do we do with the text? We're not asking you to read an exception into the text. What we're trying to do is define the nature of the contours of the right that's conferred by the statute. So think of what the US Supreme Court did in the Heller case. In interpreting the Second Amendment, which dealt with the right to keep and bear arms, the court said, we define what that right is, what it consists of, by looking to the legal history that led to its ratification. Or look at what this court did in the 2010 case of Squire Sanders, where there was a statutory codification of the attorney-client privilege. And this court said, well, in incorporating that into the statutory law, we presume they took the common law meaning with it. So we're not asking you to make up an exception. What we're asking you to do is recognize this creates a privacy right, and the nature of privacy rights at the time these acts were enacted were that they lapsed with death. Nothing in here contradicts that. And so this is presumed to retain that meaning. I mentioned also the statutory purpose. Let's look at that. once a student becomes an adult, he or she alone has the power to grant or withhold consent to the disclosure of records. The reason that matters is it suggests that the only purpose the statutes serve once the student becomes an adult is to protect the student's privacy, not his family's, not anyone else's, the student's. And so when the student dies, obviously he no longer has that interest, and that's why the disclosure is important. If I can make two more brief points, I'll try to squeeze them in. First, my friend on the other side points to an attorney general opinion from 1990 that they say is inconsistent with the position we've taken here today. I have two responses to that. First, if there's an inconsistency, we were wrong then and we're right today. Second, there is no inconsistency because in that case, or that opinion rather, what the attorney general recognized is that in interpreting when confidentiality obligations lapse, you have to look to the text. Here, for the reasons we just gave, the text suggests it lapses with death. Finally, I just want to emphasize, this is the very sort of case for which the Public Records Act exists. It's so that individuals can obtain important information from their government that they can use to insist on legislation and potentially hold local and government officials accountable. I'm happy to answer any other questions, and we appreciate your having us today. If there are none, we ask that you reverse the Second District.
Mr. Flowers, can I just ask you very quickly, do you have any problem with the fact that if this the young man at issue in this case, had he gone to private school, this case wouldn't be here? So that public schools, students who are in public schools, if we were to rule in this case the way you want us to rule, students in public schools would be more vulnerable to the disclosure of their information than students in private schools.
A couple responses. An initial matter, I'm not positive that's true. FERPA applies to anyone who takes federal funding. So if a private school were to take it, they would be bound by that. Okay. I'm not sure the Ohio Student Privacy Act is limited to public schools, but if that is a problem, and I would consent, we don't want that sort of imbalance, there's a legislative solution, which is the legislature can respond by creating a similar rule applicable.
Counsel, isn't there a legislative solution here by the legislature merely stating what you're proffering, that death allow for disclosure?
Certainly, and they could have done it that way, and frankly, I wish they would have done it that way and we wouldn't be here. But there are many ways to write the statute, and one in the task before this court is to figure out what this statute means. And as written, as the uniform guidance from attorneys general around the country and the Department of Education recognize, is that the default rule is that privacy interests lapse at death. These statutes create a privacy interest, and that may be why the General Assembly did not expressly account for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Justice.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please this honorable court, counsel for the news media, counsel for the Attorney General's office. My name is Tabitha Justice. Today, I have the great honor and privilege of representing the Bellbrook Sugar Creek Local School District Board of Education and Superintendent Dr. Douglas Kozad. The well-reasoned decision of the Second District Court of Appeals should be affirmed because federal and state law prohibit school districts from producing educational records without consent. The news media has presented a rational argument in this case why the statutory protections afforded educational records should potentially expire upon the death of a student. But that argument is best presented to the legislative branch for consideration, not this court. Neither FERPA nor the OSPA expressly grant a school district permission to release education records in these circumstances. Nor does either statute say that the protections afforded education records expire upon the death of the student. As when dealing with protections afforded by HIPAA, the attorney-client privilege, or other statutory confidentiality requirements, a public entity such as a school district must take the responsible course of action when faced with public records requests seeking confidential records. If the school district had unlawfully produced confidential records, that bell could not be unrung. Failure to maintain confidentiality of student records has consequences, including a breach of the public trust. If, on the other hand, this court concludes
that counsel, if the student is deceased, what standing do they have to complain?
potentially the estate of the student has the potential to complain, but that's really not the issue here. The issue here is that the statute requires us to maintain the integrity and confidentiality of those records. FERPA actually withdraws funding, federal funding, from schools that breach that statute.
Generally, invasions of privacy die with the person involved, correct?
The tort invasion of privacy would potentially, and it, as the second district pointed out, that is not entirely well settled in Ohio. Publicity rights, for instance, and in this case may very well trigger such rights, do not necessarily die. Any statutory rights that an individual might have might not necessarily die. But again, the issue here, even if the family doesn't have a cause of action, the issue here is that the General Assembly has told school districts that they must maintain the confidentiality of school records, regardless of what a student may or may not be able to sue the school district for later if we breach it. And again, as I mentioned, FERPA actually withdraws funding from schools for the breach of those statutes. Now, ultimately, if this court concludes that the record should be produced, the school district will have clear guidance and instruction going forward, and it will be able to produce the records to the news media within a reasonable time. But the reality is that schools in the 600 plus school districts throughout the state of Ohio have been instructed for decades that both federal and state law require them to maintain the integrity and confidentiality of student records. The news media ask you to add to those laws. They say that they don't, but through the guise of statutory interpretation, that the protections afforded by those statutes expire upon the death of the student. But historically, this court has been reluctant to add words to a statute where the General Assembly has not done so. The fact that the statute, either FERPA or the OSPA, does not include an expiration date doesn't make it ambiguous. A statute is only ambiguous where the specific words used yield more than one reasonable interpretation. The news media and the Attorney General has not pointed to any ambiguous words in the OSPA, or the FERPA for that matter. Adding words to a statute that is not ambiguous disregards the legislature's intent. When a statute is silent on a question, this court should not find it to be ambiguous and use the rules of statutory interpretation, even the legislature intentionally or even inadvertently omitted, even if they made a mistake and should have added that language in this particular statute, this court should not do so. That should be left to the legislature. No one disputes the Attorney General's position here that Public Records Act serves an important purpose. Open government is an important policy. The public should see what the government is doing. However, in fulfilling its function, the government collects significant private data about citizens. They have our social security numbers, tax records, driving records, and yes, our school records, among others. For the government to continue to function as it does, the public must have a certain level of confidence that the private information collected about themselves and their children will be protected.
So what kind of records are we talking about here? If not necessarily about this student, but just in general, what would be collected about a student?
And so I appreciate that question. Thank you, Justice French. The reality is, I think a lot of people think that school records are just attendance and grades, but they're not. School records are not just grades and attendance. Many school records contain information also protected by HIPAA. The guidance counselor privilege notes, for guidance counselors have notes. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which is the IDEA, special education records. I mean, I've seen special education records, and I'm using my hands, which is more easy to do in person than it is on video. But I've seen records where the very voluminous records for a single student. Often these records will include things like information contained in child abuse reporting statutes. We're talking typically when a parent makes a request for educational records, we even have to pull all of the emails that the parents and teachers exchange regarding that student, or even that the teachers exchange regarding that child. If you look at the statute 3319.321, it actually defines it as any personally identifiable information about that student can constitute an educational record. So again, we're not talking about just their grades or their progress. There's a lot of stuff in there that school districts collect about children.
You didn't mention disciplinary records, and I'm presuming that that's the crux of what this is all about, given what is known about this at the time, this student or this adult at the time he committed his crimes and then thereafter. And the disciplinary records and probably the guidance counselors, et cetera. That's really what they're looking for, correct?
I do believe that that's probably the case. Obviously, I can't speak on behalf of the news media and what they're actually looking for. But I do think in this particular case, when they make a request for the educational records of the student, they're wanting to see what the student was disciplined for in the past. But the reality is any counseling or mental health services or things of that nature that he received. Again, part of that could even be covered by the guidance counselor privilege, which is revised code 2317.02. Part of that could even be included in the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the IDEA. And so I do think that their focus is on the disciplinary records for this particular kid. But the reality is that when someone makes a request for educational records, we don't just look for one specific thing. And they didn't necessarily limit it to just disciplinary records. In fact, it's not unusual for the school districts to get requests from the news media for educational records of kids that have been killed in car accidents, students who have committed suicide, and other students that have been tragically killed in some fashion or another. But it's also not unusual for school districts to deny those requests on the basis of FERPA and the OSPA. The news media has chosen this particular case in which to challenge those protections due to the especially compelling optics of a deceased student who's also a mass murderer. But decisions like this can't be based upon a single incident or a single awful person. Decisions about when a statutory protection should expire are best left to the legislature, which can consider the needs of all current students and, frankly, the rights of all of us here today to our own educational records. Now, I'd like to address the notion that the news media's position that unless a privacy statute expressly states that it applies after death, it expires upon death. I think first, such a rule has a remarkably broad implication on a myriad of such statutes, some referenced in 149.43 and some not. But moreover, if that were the case, it would render essentially the last paragraph of revised code section 149.43A1 largely meaningless. That provision expressly provides for an expiration date for confidentiality statutes that don't include their own expiration date. That statute assumes there are some privacy and confidentiality statutes, like the OSPA, that extend indefinitely, and it places a 75-year time limit for all such statutes. Finally, from a public policy perspective, the news media and the Attorney General, as you just heard, presents this case as if it's their goal to help the public to expose some weakness in the educational system or to expose what led a bad person to do bad things. But law enforcement, including the FBI, have access to materials through subpoenas and other exceptions to FERPA. The Attorney General's office, the Governor's office, and even this court could access those records if access met one of the exceptions. But the reality is the legislature has not made an exception solely for the death of a student. Maybe the facts of this particular case will change how they look at this, and maybe they will go in and reconsider some of the exceptions or even add an exception for these exact circumstances. But at this time, Congress and the Ohio General Assembly have carefully crafted statutes to protect the confidentiality of education records. Both have shown that they are capable of drafting expiration dates for those statutes based upon death or the passage of time. This court should not imply an expiration date where none otherwise exists. And again, from our perspective, the judgment of the Second District Court of Appeals should be affirmed. Thank you very much for your time. I'm happy to answer any additional questions in my 3 minutes and 24 seconds if there are any others.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if I may, for rebuttal, I have 2 points I'd like to make.
Okay, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the only issue before this court is whether or not the OSPA and FERPA are applicable exceptions to the Ohio Public Records Act in this case. No other exception, for example, mental health records or disciplinary disability records, none of those exceptions have been raised. Those are inapplicable here. Second, to answer the Chief Justice's question, couldn't the state have written it the way we wanted it to? What they did and what we know for sure about the legislature is that they wrote it so that it would be in compliance with and follow the federal law, the Family Educational Privacy and Rights Act. So the statute should be interpreted consistently. That's exactly what this court has done in Sioux France. And there is no way that the worry for losing funding would be at issue because the Family Compliance Policy Office has issued the letter that says that this is how they should be interpreted. It lapses at death. And that's the same office that enforces FERPA. So for those reasons,
we are not bound by that. Would you agree?
I agree. You are not bound by that. It is not binding authority. However, under Lange, it should be deferred to where the statute is silent. And Ohio should not be an outlier and inconsistent with the way that the federal law is interpreted since it was enacted to comply with it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.